Live from Music Row in Nashville, this is Roy Mathock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour.
Roy Mathock Jr. here, and we are going to be talking money today. And I had a couple of people, they told me, they said, you should slow it down a little bit. And you give so much information in one show, just kind of slow it down and make sure that, you know, people really understand the topic. And so, you know, we have questions all the time, and you can call in your questions to our call-in number. If you want to do that, we'll be happy to call you back if we're not actually available to answer them right there. But I want to give you that number, and then if you have questions, you can call, and we'll get you answers back. And then I'll bring them up on the show like I'm going to do today. I've got a great show topic today, which is in my 40s, and I got started late, you know, saving money. What should I do? And I thought that was a great question that was called in. So you can call this number, 866-651-4848, 866-651-4848. And who knows, I may do a whole show just based on your question, which is what I'm going to do today. Also, you can send your questions to radio@roymatlockjr.com, and we'll be able to do that. And you can always visit roymatlockjr.com and listen live anytime on the internet. Also, all shows are going to be replayed on the podcast right on roymatlockjr.com. So, but this morning, I'm going to cover something that I think a lot of people are out there saying, man alive, I'm concerned. You know, I'm in my 40s maybe, and I just haven't saved a lot of money, and I need to come up with a plan. You know, I don't want to be out there, you know, at retirement worried to death for the rest of my life. And, you know, with medical advances right now, I read an article, there's like 450,000 100-year-olds now. And being 100 is great. And, you know, with, you know, if you lived 100 and have a great life, and with medical advances, you know, Bill Gates, I read a story, said if you can make it to 2030, he said you'll live forever based on biotech and everything that goes along with it. I don't know how great that is, but, you know, if you're going to live forever but you run out of money when you're 80, that's not good. And so what we're going to do today is go through kind of a background on what I would do if I got started late. And it also will be for those of you that are getting started. Maybe you're young and you're in your 20s. It's not going to be a lot of difference. But the first thing that I always do is I do something called back testing. And anytime you have a problem, it's like you go to the troubleshooting guide in the car, your car's not starting. You know, it's interesting. There's all these car shows on there, and they call up and say, what about this? It's like you walk in the doctor, and the doctor, you tell him you're sick, and you tell the doctor what's going on, and he says, okay, well, have you done this? Have you done that? And so let's back test the position you're in right now. And the way you back test it is this. You start with, you say, where am I at right now? And you do something called a balance sheet. And that balance sheet would be your assets minus your liabilities, and that gives you your net worth. Now, what I want to mention to you, though, is that many people confuse an asset when, in fact, it's a liability. So let me give you some examples of the way you got to look at that. If you own something that pays you to own it, then it's an asset. If you own something that you pay to own, it's a liability. So let's think through that. You're going to have to own some liabilities. All right, let me just give you one example of one of the biggest liabilities you'll ever have, and that's called a child. So you'll end up, you're not going to have that child without spending money on that child. That's just the way it is. But the point of it is that many times we think of our assets as assets when, in fact, they're liabilities. Let me give you a perfect example. Your personal residence seems like an asset, and you have to have a place to live. But the reality of it is you pay to own it. Or even if it's paid for, you pay to own it. Now, on the other hand, if you own a rental property, the rental property should pay you to own it. So what that means is it's definitely an asset because it pays you to own it. It pays you in the form of appreciation. It pays you in the form of income. So what happens is we have to not confuse cars are not assets, all right? Houses that your personal residence, they've got some value to them. They're a place to live, but don't look at them as an asset. If you talk to people in the financial world, one of the things that we do is we never count the personal residence as part of, you know, the plan. And the reason being is that more than likely that's tied up equity that really doesn't do anything other than maybe cut you out of having to pay rent at some point in time. And so the first thing we want to do is we get a balance sheet. We get our assets minus our liabilities. We will list things like our cars, but you'll have to put the liability that goes along with it. And so chances are you're in your 40s, you've been living good, and maybe you're looking here and you're like, man, you know, I can't believe it seemed like yesterday I was just getting out of college and I'm snapping my finger and I'm you know, 40 years old, and before I know it, I'm going to be like me. I'm 58 years old, and it seemed like yesterday I was, you know, in college. And so what happens is once we get our balance sheet in place, we have an idea of where we're at. So we add up everything we have minus everything we owe. That would be your cars and your car payments and your credit card payments and your any money you have in the bank and put your house in minus your mortgage and stuff like that. But the reality of it is this. Here's what your true assets and liabilities are. It's your investment accounts, things that pay you, all right, assets, and take away your debt, and that gives you a net worth sheet. So we start out by back testing a little bit, and it starts with the balance sheet. Then what we do is we do the troubleshooting guide, and we start looking at our past performance. And we say, well, where's the problem at? What has got me in the position I'm in right now? Is it that I had decent income, but I just spent too much money? Or has it always been an income problem? I've had, you know, change from this job to that job, never have really made any money, that kind of thing. So it's always one of two things or potentially both. So what the first thing you do is this, is you look back and you say, how much money have I made in my lifetime earnings? And I go back and I say, well, I've been working for 25 years and I've averaged making, you know, since then I've averaged making $40,000 a year. So I've had $1 million come through my hands. Now, $1 million seems like a lot, but, you know, if you're making 40 grand a year average, there's not a ton of money left over, you know, but people do know how to live. Average median household income for a family of four is like 56,000. Somehow or another, they learn how to live on that. And so the first thing we do is we look at what we earned. And then we look at that and we analyze it. So where does that fall in the category of being able to save money? Now, let's say that you look back and you've been making $150,000 a year for the last 20 years. You made $3 million and you're broke. Well, then we know right off the bat that the challenge is probably not so much in the income. It's in the handling and the outgo. And so we're going to go through, we're going to analyze the position we're in, find out what has put us where we're at. It's called a back test troubleshooting guide. Your car won't start. Do you have any gas? You have gas and you keep going and they eventually just take you all the way up. Well, in the case with this, did I make any money to speak of? Yes. Did I have a decent enough income that I should have probably been able to save some money? Yes. So it's not so much the income problem as it is the outgo problem. Now, the other side is I've never made any money. I've gone from one place to the next. You know, I can't keep a job. Maybe what I need to do is work on my income and then also my outgo. So today we're going to do that. I'm 40 years old, got started late. What do you do? We'll be right back. Roy Matlock Jr. here. If you're just tuning in, the show today is How Do you get moving if you started late? Maybe you're in your 40s. I want to give a, if you're a business owner right now, I want to give a great idea for you. You know, one of the things you want to always do is have your phone answered, you know, like old school. You know, I get tired of pushing buttons and things like that. And so I started using a company called Answer Connect. And Answer Connect is 24-hour live answering service. And they do a lot of things for you. They collect the data from the customer so you have an updated database. But also, they collect the email, and then they can even schedule follow-up appointments and work through your calendar and stuff like that. So if you are a business owner and you really don't want to spend the money to have someone answering that phone all the time, I would suggest you go to Answer Connect. You can find Answer Connect right at roymatlockjr.com and just click the button on the website, Answer Connect, and I think you'll be really excited about the pricing and what would end up happening to your customer experience. So with all that being said, let's get started. I'm maybe late getting started in saving money. We quick review. We had first thing is we're going to back test, find out what's going on, figure out how much money we've made so far. Is it an income problem or is it an outgo problem? That's the first question. And then it may be a combination of both. And so we're going to start moving in a better direction. So let me give you just kind of something to think about. So if the beginning is you say, I'm going to cut my expenses. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my income, I'm going to look, and I'm going to cut my expenses. So right off the bat, what we've got to do is we've got to go from having a negative cash flow, meaning I'm making 100 grand a year, I've been spending 105. All right, today I've been doing that for a number of years. I've got $25,000 in credit card debt. I got a car payment. Bottom line is if you take my car minus what's owed on it, you take my credit card, all that kind of stuff, I'm $40,000 to the negative. So I've been spending $5,000 a year more than I brought in for the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and now I've got $40,000 in debt. All right. Well, at least we know, right? So step number one is we look and we say, all right, we know. We got a spending problem here. So the first thing we're going to do now, the other challenge you have is because you overspent, now you got to pay all that back. And now that hurts your cash flow and things like that. And so the first thing you have to do is make a decision that you're going to get to a positive cash flow. I remember I had a business one time that was losing money. And, you know, we had a big overhead and but we had a lot of recurring income. And so what I made a decision on was I said, yeah, I'm just going to fire every employee. And I didn't really fire every employee, but on paper, I'm going to fire everybody. I'm going to fire all of the vendors, people that I'm paying money to. I'm going to fire everybody. That's what I'm doing. I'm canning everybody. So now what I've got is I've got income coming in and I've got no outgo. Now I'm going to go back in and I'm going to look at all of my overhead. I'm going to look at all of my employees. I'm going to look at all of my, you know, $99 a month things that are coming out and $50 a month, all that kind of stuff. And I'm going to see how many of them I'm going to hire back. And so I started hiring them back. And the interesting thing about it, once I mentally fired them, I would ask myself, do I really have to have this? And I went from losing money right off the bat. When I revamped everything, the company started making about a $40,000 a year profit. Wasn't great, but it was better than losing money. And so what I would do if I were you is I would go through all of my expenses and I would fire everybody. I would fire everybody out there. Now, keep in mind, you can't fire your house payment and stuff like that, but you sure can fire your car payment. And the way you fire them is that you get a cheaper car. You sell the one that's got a car payment, buy something used. You go through and look at all the little miscellaneous things that you spend money on, and you start looking at, I'm going to cut first. I'm firing everybody. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to add back certain things. But the one thing I'm not going to do is add back more than I'm making. I'm going to get on a positive cash flow. And then what you're going to do is think how great it's going to be to not be under stress anymore. You're going to say, man, here's a whole list of things that I'm not going to have to do anymore. I'm not going to have to deal with juggling. I'm not going to wake up in the middle of the night worried about things. I'm going to be past that. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to fire everybody. We're going to fire everybody, every company, every employee, everything. Then if you run a business, you do the same thing. If your business is not doing well, I just showed you what I did. I had an interesting story. I had an opportunity to spend some time with one of the guys that was on the acquisition team for what became Citibank or Citigroup. And what they would do is they started out making $20 million a year back in the early 80s, and they took over a company that was making $20 million a year. And then what they would do is they would go in and fix it. They would cut costs, do things, better operation, all that stuff, keep it, then take the money that they fixed it with, they would turn around and then they would buy another one and they'd fix it and do the same thing. And anyway, on and on and on and on and on. And at the peak, they had taken this $20 million company they took over through acquisitions and fixing and holding and all that. They made a $17 billion profit doing that. And he was telling me one time, he said, you know, we went into Citibank, and Citibank was one of our biggest acquisitions that we had done at the time. And we went in there and we cut $100 million in overhead in the first 90 days. And I said, $100 million in overhead in the first 90 days. I said, how did you do it? He said, well, the first thing we did was we made a decision that regardless of what's going to happen, we're not going to lose any more money. And they went in and they said they did layoffs and cutbacks and they renegotiated deals. He said that they even found that at Citibank in New York, they were sending overnight envelopes from the top floor to the bottom floor. And he said it was just amazing, all of the waste and everything that went on. And so he did that. And he said, then what happened is, of course, all of the employees are mad. Everybody's mad. You know, the whole place is mad. And he said, but guess what? We're not mad anymore because we're not losing money anymore. And we had to get to a point where we couldn't just feed this beast of a $100 million loss or whatever loss it was. So they cut $100 million. So he said, 90 days into it, everybody's mad. He said, then certain departments would not be mad anymore. And so those departments, he did the second round of cuts, and he cut back on resources, cut back on employees, cut back on this. So he wanted to make sure they were still mad at the end of 90 days. And so after doing all that, after about 6 months or so, there's a bunch of them that were mad from the start, a bunch of them that weren't mad anymore, and then there were some that were actually understaffed. But what they ended up doing then is then they would add back people and they would get it back on track. And now all the expenses that they were spending, all right, that used to be wasted, people got used to it. They learned to live on less. They learned to make things more valuable, the resources they had, and suddenly the company was on a profit mode. And then they would go and make that profit, then they go find another company. Well, in your case, that's what you've got to do. You've got to do the same thing. You're not going to like it. Your kids are not going to like it. You know, when you start cutting back, everybody's not going to like it. But people become more resilient once they understand what the idea is. And so one of my other friends who's, completely financially independent, wealthy, beyond, you know, any imagination most people could ever have, every year, even to this day, around November, he goes through and he does exactly what I'm talking about. He goes in there and he looks at every expense that he's got going out, and he says, do I need this? And he fires all the companies he's doing business with, and then he comes back and decides who he's going to rehire. Let me give you some ideas on things that you want to do. You want to take a look at one of the biggest things I see that really is bad, and that is cars. I cannot believe how much. I saw an ad a couple days ago. Would you like an exotic car? It was an Instagram post. Can you afford to do it? First off, you have to put 20% down, all right, on the car. Well, right off the bat, you can't afford it. All right. If you're thinking about putting 20% down on your Lamborghini, okay, then you probably are not in any position to be driving your Lamborghini. But it was interesting, the mindset of that kind of deal. So what you want to do is if you have car payments, you want to get rid of them. You know, I had $615 a month in car payments. That's what I did to get started saving money. I got rid of the car payments. Now, did I like the cars that I drove? Nah, I really didn't like the cars I drove, but I liked them better than the car payment. All right, and so I start there. So I look at other things that that people are putting a lot of money into. Their house, they are spending way too much money on their house. All right, it may be that you need to change your neighborhood because you can't afford it. If you listen to a mortgage person, they're going to have you spending, you know, 50% of your income on housing expenses. All right. Now, keep in mind that house is not an asset. It's a liability. All right. It's something you pay for. And so what you need to do is consider maybe downsizing your house and cutting some costs. How do you do that? Well, there's a lot of ways you can do it. You can move out of town. I just had a client of mine that we talked about it. He's going to move out of town and cut a couple hundred thousand dollars in cost and not change really the house that much, but he's going to move to Dixon. And so as a result, Dixon's right outside of Nashville. And so by doing that, what happens is you cut that cost. So let's say you cut your housing expenses in half, and then you turn around and you cut your car cost, you know, cut it down. Before you know it, guess what you got? You got a bunch of cash flow left over. And speaking of, if you're interested in doing some of that downsizing, I've got the real estate agent that you should use, Angela Peach with Bench with Compass Realty. It used to be with Benchmark, now Compass Realty is the one I always go to, and I would tell you that because she does stuff different. She stages. She shows you how to get the most dollars for your house by making the house look right and getting it ready to sell. And if you're looking to buy something, she can help you find something that maybe needs a little cleanup and touch-up to where you can get a great deal on that as well. So Angela Peach, Google Angela Peach Realtor. Google Angela Peach Realtor. And we are going to be right back. Roy Matlock Jr. back, and today's show has been, what do you do if you started late toward retirement? And we've been going through the first part is, you know, doing some back testing, finding out where you're at right now, what the problem is, then we've looked at ways to cut expenses. If you have questions that you would like answered, or if you would like to get some of our downloads, you can go to roymatlockjr.com. But many of you are driving down the road and you have a hard time filling out a form like that. We have budget forms, by the way, on the website. But any of the forms, we'll be happy to email them to you. Just make a phone call. Write this number down, 866-651-4848. That's 866-651-4848. We have someone answering live all the time, and you can call and we'll get that sent out to you. So 866-651-4848, as well as if you would like to get an analysis or a free review done by one of my people, we can do that. That's what I do. I help people with their money. Been doing it for 35 years. So with all this being said, we're looking at firing our expenses and getting on track. So what we're going to do is we're going to have our expenses and our income traveling in a different direction. To kind of give you an example of what I mean by that, we're going to have our expenses going down. That creates a gap. If all things being equal, your income stays the same and your expenses go down, well, then you've got a little bit of a gap. Now, we're going to have our income going up. All right, so they're traveling in different directions. So let's say that right now you're making 80 grand a year, 100 grand a year, something like that, and your income and expenses are in the wrong direction. Your expenses are 105 and you make 100. Well, let's cut your expenses by, you know, I believe this, anything that you manage, I don't care what it is, it improves 20%. I mean, if you want to manage your health, you'll get healthier. It's simple. I mean, whatever you focus on, you put on paper and make a decision to do, what's going to happen is it's going to get better. So if you want to cut your expenses 20%, most people can do that right off the bat. So now what we've done, you were making 100, spending 105. Now we're going to cut our expenses. Now you're making, we cut our expenses 20%, you're at about 85. So now we got a $15,000 gap. All right, that's cool right off the bat. Now what we're going to do is we're going to look at our income and we're going to say, what can we do to raise our income? So what we're going to do is have our income and expenses traveling in a different direction. And that's the best way to start doing this, the way you look at it. So now what are some other things to cut expenses? Start buying used everything. All right, I don't care what it is, whatever you want. Just buy it used right off the bat. Usually you save by buying used, I mean, 50%, 75%, that kind of thing. Takes a little bit of work. I remember back in the days when I was doing seminars, I would buy all of my clothing. And this is when I was making money, but I'd made up my mind I wanted to get free. And I was making, you know, a big six-figure income, and I was buying used clothes from the Ladies of Charity. I would go out and buy pinpoint cotton dress shirts for $1 at Goodwill for $1. And a lot of them were, you know, Tom James kind of stuff, really nice clothes where people might have outgrown them or something like that. And so I did that kind of thing. So anything you do, if you want to do it, just do it used. And especially today, I mean, you've got every kind of option from Facebook and eBay and all these different things to where you can find used stuff. And so I would absolutely do that. I know, you know, when I was telling people, you know, I played a lot of golf They're wanting to get started playing golf. And I said, well, just go over one of the golf places. There's used golf clubs. You save about 60, 70%, something like that. And you can get stuff because there's a lot of people that buy golf clubs. And then they buy another set. They're just a collector of golf clubs. And so, anyway, I have friends like that. Have a buying moratorium. You're just not going to buy anything. You're just going to not do it right now anymore. And you're going to make that decision. And that's going to allow you to get out of debt, apply all of the cost savings to debt. And what I mean by debt, not mortgage debt, but cars, credit cards, stuff like that. Maybe you want to sell your car, buy a cheaper car, and that gets you out of debt that much sooner. And so it's just a matter of making decisions. Keep in mind the average median household income in the United States is about $56,000 for a family of four. Hey, they're still alive. They're still kicking. They're living. And I'll tell you what, if you figure out how somebody like that does it, you can figure out how to do it yourself. And so next thing we're going to do is we're going to raise our income. All right. And so we're going to raise our income, cut our expenses. How do we raise our income? Well, there's three ways to raise your income. First way is get a part-time job. You know, getting ahead financially is always going to be a sacrifice. If it was easy, everybody would be there. Half of America right now doesn't have $500 set aside to take care of an unexpected emergency. That's how they're living. Can you imagine your life? Some of you are out there right now where you're like, man, if anything happens, anything, it's a disaster. Disaster. I don't even have $500 to my name. Well, if you're listening right now, we're going to fix that. And the way you fix it is you go make some extra money and you save it all. Now, what do you think it would be like if you said to yourself, if anything happens, it doesn't matter because I have enough money set aside for the rest of my life and some. I'm not ever going to have to worry. I have enough income coming in every month for my savings and investments that I never have to work another day in my life. What's the difference in that and worrying about $500? Think of the stress and all that kind of stuff. So what you do is you start saying to yourself, you know, I'm going to get financially free. Let me give you a little rule of thumb on income. If you save $1,486 a month at 9%, all right, hypothetically, 20 years, $1,486 a month, that's $1 million in cash. Most of you that I'm talking to right now, if I took the demographics of the people that are on here right now, you could cut your cost, raise your income a little bit, and save $1,486 a month. I would set it up on a draft where it's automatically pulled out of my account. It might even be you have it pulled out in your retirement plan through your work. It would be an IRA maybe, or maybe if you're self-employed, a SEP plan, something like that for small businesses. There's a lot of different ways of doing it, but the bottom line is I'd have it pulled out. Now, if you have 25 years to retirement, say you're 40 and you want to retire at 65, it costs $885 a month at 9%, $885 at 9%. That right there, that's so doable. Guys, you understand how doable $8.85 a month is? If you're right now just barely getting by, that's figuring out a way to make an extra couple hundred dollars a week as a sideline while you're rather than watching TV. You know, I always tell people this, if you're wanting to get ahead, realize you're watching TV and helping somebody else make money. Why don't you take the time you're helping other people make money, meaning the people on TV, and put it to use yourself where you're making money? All right. And when you do it, $8.85 is so doable. Okay. And if you have 30 years out, it only takes $542 to save $1 million. Guys, $1 million. Now let's think about $1 million. Is that a fortune? No, but you know what? It'll pay you 50 at 5%. If you pull 5% out, it's $50,000 a year, do nothing money. Now, does it mean you're going to always be able to pull it? No, these are hypotheticals. Everything I talk about on this, if you're listening to this show, you need to make a decision. Either you're going to do it yourself. I don't have any issue with Home Depot. There's plenty of do-it-yourselfers. Or you need to find somebody that can help you get on track. I'm a delegator. I don't tend to do things other than things I know how to do and that I'm an expert in. The rest of it, I go out and I find trusted advisors, people that I can look to if I have an issue. I've got a guy that I've been doing business with for years in the car business, and I trust that if he tells me something's wrong with my car, you know what? He's going to fix it. I don't have any issue with it. I go to the dentist. I go to doctors. I have, you know, I've got all these different people that I go to, real estate people. All right. I know what I'm good at. You know, I'm good at a few things. I'm good at what I'm doing right now. I think most people would agree, you know, after 35 years of teaching people about their money, I kind of got an idea of how to teach people about their money. And so I stick to things I know how to do. I stick to business things. I stick to stuff like that. And then the other stuff I delegate. And so what we're going to do, we're going to raise our income. That's one. Well, let's say, though, you're out there and you're just you've never made any money, okay? You've always bumped from one job to the next. Part-time income's probably not the real answer. The real answer is that you got to make a decision to get good at something. Find something you like and get good at it. And what I mean by find something you like and get good at it, I mean do some soul searching. Find out what you really like to do, and then find out if there's a way you can get involved in that, and then you can work hard, become great at what you're doing. But ultimately, guys, own a business. Own a business. Is it a part-time business, part-time gig, a full-time gig? Bottom line is, own a business. That's how we work. So the last segment, hopefully by now, we're thinking about raising our income, cutting our expenses. Now we're going to talk in the last segment, what are we going to do to put that money to work? This is Roy Matlack Jr. We'll be right back. Roy Matlack Jr. here, and this is the Money and Business Hour. If you are tuning in right now, I'm on every single weekend in a number of stations all over the internet as well. You can listen online. You can go to roymatlackjr.com and listen online to all of my prior shows. We've got podcasts, got all kinds of stuff like that. And so, anyway, what we're going to do now is you know, the whole show topic was, I'm getting started late, what do I do? And, you know, the real key to it is get your income and your outgo going in the opposite directions. We're going to work on the income, move it up, get the outgo going the opposite direction. You know, part of what you have to do is learn how to really get control from a budgeting standpoint of the money that you make. You can't write a check and then after the money's spent, figure out what actually happened. And so I'm going to give you a quick overview of the budget, And then after doing the budget, I'm going to talk about the different retirement plans. And then that's going to probably be all the time we have today. But with that being said, I'll be posting a lot more. We're probably going to continue on this subject line again. If you have questions, be sure and call, okay? And call in the questions or email them to radio@roymatlockjr.com. I may do a whole show just based on your question. Or you can call at 866-651-4848, 866-651-4848. And we'll do that kind of thing right there. So let's talk about the budget. The budget, I'm going to give you some quick ideas. You can also go to roymatlockjr.com and get the budget forms or call that number, 866-651-4848. We'll send you the budget forms. So here's how a budget works. Basically, what we do is we have a list of everything that we spend. We fire all the expenses, as we've talked about earlier, and we're going to get our expenses in line. And then I recommend that, you know, if you're married, you have three accounts. If you're single, you have two accounts. And the first account is all your money goes into it. I call it the draft account. Take everything you make. It goes into one place. That's your total income. I put all the automation in there that will allow me to pay my bills on time and automate what I'm going to do. So let's say you got a credit card that you're trying to pay off and you want to add $100 a month to a certain credit card, the smallest one. Just go set it up where it automatically drafts a specific amount of money, and then that starts paying off that credit card until it's paid off. All right, and then you would do the same thing again. So we're going to get out of debt. We're going to have the whole rule of pay yourself first. If you've gotten yourself out of debt, we're going to have money withdrawn from our checking account or our paycheck to go into retirement plans. If you have one through work, you're probably going to do your 401k and get some matching funds possibly. But if you don't have one, you're going to probably go toward the direction of getting your individual retirement accounts. We'll get into that a little bit. And so we've got all of that. We also have money left over inside of that account. It should be growing from the standpoint that you've got car maintenance set aside, car replacement, different things like that. And so we do that. The other account that you can be funding, and this is out of these are two checking accounts or three checking accounts. You would fund your emergency fund. You can do that through a money market account. You can do it through the bank, or you can do it through one of the investment firms. But the bottom line is it needs to be separate from your checking account. So what we have is we have a draft account. All of our money comes in. We draft it different places. Draft to pay bills, we draft emergency fund, we draft to pay credit cards off, we draft to save for long-term retirement and stuff like that. And so house payment comes out, everything like that. Then each week you transfer X amount of predetermined amount of money into your spend it account. That's the money you're going to spend every week. If you're married, both of you have your account. And then on Sunday night you say, okay, I'm going to move this over and $200 a week each. Whatever that number is, that's for gas and eating out and all the different things like that. And then you go and live on that $200. At the end of the week, if you have some money left over, good for you. You might pull less if you're really getting aggressive. Say, well, I've got $20 left this week. I'm pulling $180, or you'll still put your $200 in there, and you have a little extra for the week because you didn't spend it the week before. But all of it with the mindset that you spent less than you made. All right. So with that being said, what we're going to do then is we're going to make the assumption that we've worked on our income, we've worked on our expenses, we've got we got less going out than we got coming in, we have a gap, we're building the gap, we're making the gap bigger because we're doing better with our earning ability. We're out there looking for ways to save money, cut costs. We're looking for ways to make more money, take advantage of opportunities, that kind of thing. And so we might go in there, and as we get our emergency fund in place, we cut some cost in our insurance by raising our deductibles. You know, we buy the right life insurance, term insurance. If you have cash value insurance, bad deal. I've always recommended just buy term insurance and invest the difference separately. So if you've got life insurance policies, you might want to consider looking at those, because you want to make sure you have enough, but at the same time that you are not buying the wrong kind, universal life, whole life, that kind of stuff, bad deal. The car insurance, raise your deductibles, raise your liabilities because you don't want to get sued and get hurt. But by raising your deductibles, if you have enough money set aside, that can save you some money. I've been many times where I had older cars and I just carried the liability and not collision, save me money. Raised my deductibles on my health insurance, same deal. Did catastrophic insurance, save myself money. So see, I'm all these little things that I'm doing. I'm cutting costs on my spending. I'm doing everything like that. Now, there's a thing called the Rule of 72. And the Rule of 72 is a hypothetical illustration of the way money works. So if you take the Rule of 72 and you take any interest rate and divide it into that number, it'll tell you about how long it takes your money to double. So that means if you put a $10,000 investment, let's say you got started, at 3%, you would take 72 divided by 3, it's 24 years. That $10,000 would double in 24 years. It'd double again in 48 years. So a one-time $10,000 investment over 48 years would grow to $40,000, 10 to 20 to 40. Now, I always thought if I doubled my interest rate, I would double my money. Doesn't work that way. What compounding does is your money would double at 6% rather than 3. It would double in 12 years. And over that same period of time, it did 12, 24, 36, and so on. And then what ends up happening is at the end of that time, rather than having $40,000, you have $160,000. Now, if you could get 12%, and I'm not saying that you get 12 everywhere you go, but if you got 12%, let me tell you what happens on compounding. It doubles every 6 years, and that same $10,000 is $2,560,000 versus $40,000 versus $160,000. So what that Rule of 72 does is it says to you, look, time and compounding, getting my money working for me, makes a huge difference in the final outcome on the way I'm going to be doing things. So 48 years, so that's a long time. Well, I mean, you may be 50 years old right now. 48 years may not be that long, because there's people living to 100 all the time. And so what you want to do is always make your money work for you. You don't have it working for the bank. You don't want to have it working for all these other places. You want to have it working for you. So get educated. Find ways to get your money working for you. And then from a retirement standpoint, which is what the show today was kind of geared toward, I started late. Where should I put my money? Well, you know, to begin with, I'm not going to make a specific recommendation on investments. We will do that if we were to sit down and we knew exactly what you were doing and got to take a look at your, you know, assets, liabilities, time horizons, risk tolerance, all those kind of things. That's what financial people do. That's what I do. You know, I look at people's scenario on a personal level, and then I make that decision. But I'm going to give you an idea of what happens. What happens is this. We want to always fully fund, if at all possible, our retirement plans. So now let's say that you at a 401k, a lot of times the companies will put in, say, if you put in 6%, we'll match 3%. Take advantage of all those kind of things. Have it deducted. Now, would I do that when I've got a bunch of credit card debt? No, I would get my credit card debt knocked out. Then I'd start doing that. So you've got that. Now, you can do retirement accounts like a Roth IRA or a regular IRA. And depending on your current employment scenario, income, and all that, you can make decisions, tax bracket. A lot of decisions go in whether it should be a regular or a Roth IRA. But the bottom line is that, you know, you can put approximately $500 a month in to an IRA. And if you're over 50, you can put an additional $1,000 a year in. And so you put in your $500 a month and you're able to really start now. And remember that $500 a month 30 years from now at 9%, that's the $542 a month became $1 million. And so with that being said, we have that. If you're a self-employed business owner, you've got a couple things. If you don't have employees, I recommend a SEP for most business owners because it's very flexible. You can put 25% of your profit in and take it off your income taxes. I've been doing that kind of thing for many, many, many years because I have a lot of independent contractors that work with me. And so as a result of that, I really don't have employees. And so I use a SEP. Cool thing about a SEP, if you haven't funded your SEP yet, for 2018 and you're on an extension, you can go back to your 2018 returns or the prior year returns up until tax filing deadlines, when you, even with extensions, and you can still get that written off. So let's say last year you made some money, you made $100,000 profit, and you have some extra money right now. You hadn't filed your taxes yet because you're filing extensions. You know what? You could put $25,000 in there, 25% of your profit, and take it off your income taxes, save you a bunch of money on your income taxes. And so what I would be doing is thinking in terms of you can do it. You know, we've talked this whole day about I'm late. What do I do about it? The good news about people in their 40s or whatever is you should be running right into your peak earning years. And hopefully what you've done is you've worked on becoming a pro at what you're doing. And when I say a pro, get really good at something. Find something you like, become an expert in it. The money always comes to the experts. I don't care what you're doing. If you're a personal trainer, next thing you know, become expert at it, and you're selling every daggum training magazine all over the country, and you make millions of dollars. I mean, there's always a way if you become great and you understand leverage where you get other people helping you to be able to go out and really make it happen. I want to give you a few numbers here, 866-651-4848 for any questions, anytime. We will call you back or we'll send you any of our downloads. Also, visit RoyMatlockJr.com and stay tuned. You can listen to the podcast, and I will talk to you later.